You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. Today's topics will be FSCon's 2011, Kaizendo, and GNU Parallel. Hello everyone, you might know me as CT, or perhaps Kenneth from All in IT Radio. Today we'll talk a bit about FSCon's this year. You remember in a past episode of Hacker Public Radio I mentioned a bit about the conference in general, but I thought I would mention a few of the topics we will have a privilege of hearing this year. Among other speakers, we will hear Jeremiah Foster again. You've already heard an interview with him. He will talk about embedded free software, open source, in your car, which is right up his alley. We will hear a talk about accessibility for Qt and KDE. Of course, there will be a talk about Bitcoin. We will hear a talk by Johan Tillin about Necessitas Qt on Android. That's quite interesting. If you're not in the KDE camp, we will hear a talk named The Design of GNOME 3 by a man called Andreas Nilsson. We'll hear the topic Erlang Embedded Simulation, how to run successful contributor sprints. That's in the free desktop environments category for some reason. The keynote Saturday, will be held by none other than the famous Richard Stallman. And it is not one of his ordinary titles, because this talk is entitled Dialogue with Richard Stallman. Might be something to look forward to. We'll hear some coverage of the Open RISC project, theming GTK Plus applications with CSS. That sounds interesting. We'll hear Catch Them Early, Free Software in Education by Guido Arnold. We'll hear talk about Arduino, and we'll have some workshops, of course. There'll be some coverage of WikiLeaks, and there'll be some people talking about all these self-building machines. It's a man called Johan Söderberg who will talk under the theme of reproducing machines, reproducing economic relations. We'll hear the theme, the revolution will not be televised, but will it be on YouTube? And Sunday's keynote will be under the theme Hackers for Social Justice by Kristina Haralanova. And there are another talk at Sunday afternoon which I will catch named Steed, Saddle Up for Instant Encryption. It's about mail encryption. It seems very interesting. There are also some Python talk, and there will be another Python event in association with FSCons, which I don't remember at the moment where it was, but it's somewhere in Gothenburg. You can probably look that up for yourselves. Anyway, I'm looking forward to FSCons this year, although this show will probably be aired after FSCons has taken place. I hope to get some good interviews this year as well. From last year, I have a few other tidbits, a few other gold nuggets for you. We will start off with a man from Norway. His name is Salve J. Nielsen, and he had a talk named Kaizendo, Customizable Schoolbooks. He is active in the local free software communities in Oslo, Norway. He is an organizer of several conferences. He's a Perl hacker. And currently he works on Kaizendo.org, which is a tool for creating customizable textbooks. If you have a look at that webpage, it says, imagine a school book where the pupil and her teacher can choose the topic depth, clarity of text, and homework difficulty as needed and necessary. Add alternatives for teachers, supporting different instructional methods, teaching styles, schools, variations in chapter content based on time constraints and policy, and parents, having a topic summary to read before helping with homework. This is what we mean with customizable textbooks. It's a very interesting concept, but I started off with asking him the age-old question, why are you here?
I gave a talk first at 10 o'clock yesterday about my project, and it's both that and meet people and look what's going on and look at all. It's a nice and feeling to this whole conference. It's my second time, and all right. So it's in general just this, I have to go to this one every year now. So it's a cool place to be.
Oh, it is. I heard your presentation. It was very nice.
Oh, cool.
Tell me a little bit about it.
All right. I'm trying to make a piece of software together with a bunch of people. It's free software licensed, AGPL, where we want to create a tool that you can use to write textbooks that can be individually customized to suit the needs of the reader. That's the basic problem we're trying to solve. We want to have textbooks for school kids that can be customized in such a way that they spend, it's more interesting for them to read, that they spend less time, or if they have some physical problems like dyslexia or something like that, then the book also helps with them to manage this and still keep up the learning rate as the rest of the class. That's the idea here.
How old is the project?
It's been mulling around in my brain for like 10 years. I started it properly just about a year ago when I quit my old job and said, all right, I want to try and do this and see if I can make it. We've had code working since May. Quite a few of the preparations we've been doing. I have a partner in crime called Sein Svensson. We've also been trying to look at not only how to solve this problem and how to make use of all kinds of interesting technologies, but also seeing if we can make business out of this too. We want to make a free software-based business in order to make sure that what we do has a viable life cycle around it, so that it doesn't just disappear if some of us get hit by the bus, basically.
Yeah, right. I work as a teacher in secondary education here in Sweden.
Oh, cool.
And, I would like to use what you're talking about. I would like the result. But there aren't any real result. There aren't any books to use yet.
No, the cool thing here is that there are books today, quite a few of them. I'm not entirely sure about the Swedish state of the world, but in Norway, where I come from, we have something called the National Digital Learning Arena, where basically 18 out of 19 counties have decided to pool their money to buy the complete rights for a bunch of school books. I think they have 19 topics now. And then build, buy time of teachers and enthusiasts so they can gradually improve the text in those books so that they fit better to what's needed in the classroom. So, and those books are Creative Commons share alike, non-commercial licensed, and they also tend to remove the non-commercial bits, so it's even possible to create business around that. So this is the situation in Norway. If you just look around for open education resources web pages, like the OER Grapevine, or if you look at Wikibooks, plenty of other books that are a good basis to start improving them. So that's what I'm trying to do. I can't give a book to anyone yet, but I would like at least to have there's a tool so we can make those books. And we just need to start with one book, really, that is the good old one story, beginning, middle, end type, and then add the customizations to it that's needed for the different types of people and their problems.
All right. But isn't doing a book for a dyslexic or for any kid or for other special needs, isn't that writing 3, 4, 5 different books, essentially?
Yeah. Yes, it is, and probably more even.
Right.
Like if you have a book that's for talented kids, like kids that learned early how to read very quickly and basically they are bored in the classroom, then maybe you want more information. But who knows, maybe some of them are interested in a specific topic, so they would like to have more information around it, or on that topic in that chapter, or they have a week where they figure out that they don't have time, or if you have all the combinations of issues that you want to solve, somebody who is both interested in in-depth information of some historical fact and is a dyslexic. So the combination, there is a danger of a combinatorial explosion, basically, in how much is you have to write. Right. So there is basically only one way of doing that, and that's, first of all, see what's needed, and then, secondly, most importantly, is make sure that those people who have a need get the opportunity to add it to the text. So it's basically has to be written in public in some way. But at the same time, you want it to be one coherent story that's being told, so you can actually use it as a kind of a guideline for what's going on in the classroom and when you bring your book home to do your homework. So you still need the language to be consistent, the pacing of the story has just about the same thing. Maybe some versions of the text don't give as much background information, so it's less to read. But still, it's kind of the same story, however you write it, so you can take one version of the book and put it next to the other one and check, is the story right? Each point raised throughout the text, are they in the correct order? Is the tone of the language the same? You can do comparisons like that and still manage to make it not too difficult to write this. It's still a hell of a lot of work, but you can make it anyway, because we have like the web, and we know that writing immensely large, hugely complicated texts is quite possible today. If you look at some like Linux kernel, that's text too. Sure. Yes, and basically what we're trying to do is make that way of writing texts available to regular authors who want to write school books.
But what you're talking about, and of course that's your idea, yep, is the tool to create it. How will you display it? Is your idea to print the different versions of the book, or any
right
multimedia?
No. Not multimedia. Right now, I'm basically thinking, let's just make a web page with the content, and I'm focusing on what's needed for the textual content and supporting images. But the thing here is, in order to make this happen, it must be easy to copy and change, update. And if we put multimedia in there, say a flash animation or a visualization of some chemical process or whatever, and somebody selects that animation and says, oh, by the way, I don't understand this. Could you do this and this in order to improve how this point is raised? Then there's no trivial way of making an update to that specific aspect of that specific animation. So it's kind of we can't touch that. There's already hundreds of projects out there who do the interactive thing, but let's try and do something with the text thing, the basics, basically. That's what I'm trying to do here. And when it comes to publishing, well, we have straightforward HTML right now, so putting it on a web page and using that is simple. Making it readable on handheld devices is a matter of tweaking the CSS files, basically.
True. Right.
And converting that into something you can send to the print shop for your own custom book is a doable problem. That's something that was solved and in a very pleasing manner like 5 years ago.
Right.
And I can point at the book that actually did that.
Well, yeah, you're correct. The problem is creating the text.
Yes, it is. So that's the really difficult bit. And, well, a nice tool that you can use for cooperation and giving feedback, and using the feedback for writing the next revision of that text and having some way of basically saying this text is now good enough, so we make book version 1.2 available. If you want to use that one in your classroom, just use it. And so it's think about treating textbooks like free software projects. It's same thing, but instead of having one edition every 2 years, you have one every 2 weeks if you want to.
Very exciting. One last question.
Yes.
What should I do? As I said, I'm a teacher. I really want to consume. I don't produce that much.
Yeah.
But what should I do? How can
Well, right now we're trying to set up a project. Okay, we have a project. We have people hacking on the code. We're trying to do make a prototype right now. We have running code that doesn't do much yet, but we have a very clear idea of what we want to do. We still need feedback, and we need on the usage eventually. We're planning on doing something that makes the code available for people to basically browse the website and give feedback. Might take a few months before we are there. This is kind of, we're doing this on our spare time. All right. None of us is paid to do this, even if I have hopefully some kind of viable commercial future in there somewhere. So if you want to help, it's go to kaizendo.org. That's a wiki with some basic information. See if there's something that interests you. Log on there. Fix the text there. If you have questions, we have an IRC channel on Freenode called Kaizendo. And if you want to get a picture of what's going on, slow progression, or even have some questions or discussions, we have a mailing list. It's all on the wiki. It's kaizendo.org.
Wonderful. Yeah. Splendid. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So is that cool or what? In Norway, they buy textbooks and release them under Creative Commons. I just have to say, way to go, Norway. As a teacher, I really like the sound of this. To be able to adapt a text to pupils who read way ahead or need more time to take in the material, to actually be able to give them what they need through the material that you have. You don't have to think on your feet all the time. It sounds great. Next in line to be interviewed was a man from Denmark, our other neighboring country up here in the cold north. His name was Ole Tange, and he gave a talk about GNU Parallel. He also had a terrible cold this day, so we were happy he actually showed up at all. And you could hear on his voice that he wasn't actually feeling that well all the time. But he was a trooper, and we're glad he came. He runs the large sequencing computers at the Bioinformatics Center in Copenhagen, Denmark. And if you read about GNU Parallel at the GNU.org website, you find that it says GNU Parallel is a shell tool for executing jobs in parallel using one or more computers. A job can be a single command or a small script that has to be run for each of the lines in the input. The typical input is a list of files, a list of hosts, a list of users, a list of URLs, or a list of tables. A job can also be a command that reads from a pipe. GNU Parallel can then split the input and pipe it into commands in parallel. Intrigued yet? Well, here he is, the man behind the program. And I started out by asking him what he thought about the whole situation at FSCons and his talk.
So I was quite happy that people quite understood what I was talking about, because that's always the problem when you're talking to an audience, that you don't always know what level you can go at.
Oh, of course.
And clearly this audience already knew what we were talking about, and it was the right audience, and they knew XRX, and when you're knowing XRX, GNU Parallels sort of comes in automatically. So it was good to tell that to people, and I got a few ideas while talking to them. So in the next version of GNU Parallel, you will see some extra features.
Well, I heard a few comments that, they thought there weren't enough technical talks and presentations here, so you fell well in with that crowd.
Ah, oh, that's good then.
Me, on the other hand, I'm not quite that technical. Of course, I live on the command line to some extent, but I can't really think of when would I use Parallel.
Well, you would use Parallel since you're making audio, right? So let's assume that you have all these audio files and you want to convert the audio files from MP3 to OCK. Right? So you have 1,000 of those files, and you have a computer with 4 cores, right? So you want to run 4 jobs in parallel. You don't want 1,000 to run in parallel, but you want 4 in parallel. And that's where GNU Parallel really shines, because you simply go to the directory and then you type the command you want to run, and you put Parallel in front of it, you do three colons and your arguments afterwards, and you're done.
And in my head that translates as, all right, should I actually learn to use Parallel, or should I just leave the computer over the night?
Yeah, well, the learning curve is really, 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 really small. If you if what you are doing, if you already know how to use your encoder,
true,
and basically what you're just, instead of putting the word nice in front of the name, you put the word parallel in front of the name, and instead of giving the arguments, you do three colons, and then you give the arguments, for instance, a star, or a star.mp3, and then you're done.
Well, all right.
That is fairly simple, right? And yeah, there are way more fancy features, but most users, they start by just doing that. And even me as the author, that is the command I use all the time. In my daily life, oh, I just need to do this on 1,000 files or 1,000 users. I just do that. The three colon thing, really, really easy, and it gets the job done. And it gets a job faster than doing it overnight.
All right. I heard one question that was in the air afterwards. If you would like, well, let's say you have a couple of dozen servers and you want to do something, you want to do an update, perhaps,
yeah,
security update, something on all of them.
Yeah.
Is this possible through Parallel, or is it the wrong use case? That is
exactly the wrong use case.
All right.
But you're not the first one to make that assumption and saying, so GNU Parallel does not run the same command on a lot of servers.
No, all right.
It runs different commands on a lot of servers with different arguments and then get the results back. What you're looking for is documented in GNU Parallel's main page, because others have made that assumption. So of course in the main page it'll say, well, there are some alternative tools that does more or less the same, and the one you're looking for is probably something like Cluster SSH, which would then open a window to each of your servers and then have a master window, and you type in the master window, it goes to all the servers, and then you move your mouse to another one of the windows and it only does to that server. And that is made for that. You can force GNU Parallel to be a poor man's version of that, because you can give a list of servers and say run this command, and your argument would then be the host name. But there are tools that it's actually made for it. GNU Parallel is not made for that.
When did Parallel become GNU Parallel?
Fairly recently. It did it this spring. Parallel has been in development for quite a few years. And it didn't become GNU before I felt that it was stable enough.
Oh, all right. Was that the reason why you waited?
Not quite, but that's a good excuse, right?
All right. Is it included in any Linux distribution today?
Well, to be honest, I'm not good at keeping track of that, because I can see there are packages turning up here and there. And I'm not sure if they're included in the main branch or only an experimental branch. But I know there's packages for Debian, there are packages for CentOS, there are packages for SUSE, there's packages for FreeBSD, there's packages for Solaris, there's packages for, yeah, really a lot of the distributions, but I don't know if they made it into the main branch.
No, okay. And still, it's basically just a Perl script. You can't download the file and just run it.
Yes, and not just basically, it is.
All right.
So it totally is only a Perl script, and even the main page is generated from the Perl script. So it really is only that Perl script.
Why Perl?
Because that was the language I knew better.
All right. Okay, Emacs or VI?
Ooh, I'm going to offend a lot of users now. There are going to be VI users that I'm going to offend.
Indeed. All right, so Emacs it is.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I almost understood that when you, on your slide, you showed Emacs first and then VI as an afterthought. But it was sensitive of you. Truly. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, if you didn't have GNU Parallel in your arsenal of tools, have a look at it. And that's all for today, folks. We've had two really nice interviews and two really nice projects you can have a look at. Of course, you will find all the relevant links and the links to both Salve's and Ole's talks at FSCons in the show notes. They are both on Vimeo, if you are interested, and I will leave the links for the respective project's homepage as well. Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. Live long and podcast.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.